Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, back here at the Cover Up Cafe, and we're doing our 60th anniversary shows. And I wanted to tell you right off the bat that we've had a lot of fun here at the Cover Up Cafe, and the food is delicious. Just had one of those Swiss bacon burgers, and it was delicious. I'd like to thank Gene Fraser, Linda Armstrong, and everybody involved with the Cover Up Cafe for great hospitality. Speaking of hospitality, the South is known for good hospitality, and this man's from Middleton, Tennessee, is that right?
Middle Tennessee. Right.
Okay, and it's in the middle of Tennessee, I bet.
I guess I should not shirk my mother's or my family's hometown, Gallatin, Tennessee.
I know where that is. Harry Dale Huffman is our guest, and you've got an e-book out, and it's also being published by Lulu.
That's right.
And on same publisher that publishes Farah Yudaza's book, who works with us on our staff.
Oh,
so
that's good.
We feel like we're already in good company.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about why you're here in Roswell.
I'm just trying to meet the nice people here, basically, and get out into the world and see if I can make connections and interest anybody in what I've done.
And we're going to talk about what you've done, and it's an interesting idea, concept, theory, hypothesis. How would you like to refer to it as?
The first big discovery I call the Great Mapping, so that's a fair. I also call it the Design of the Gods in that booklet you're holding.
Yes, and that is the name of the book. And when we talk about that, what do you mean the Design of the Gods? They designed what planet Earth is all about?
Well, amazingly, the surface of the Earth, the shapes and positions of the land masses on the Earth were changed less than 20,000 years ago by the gods, by the people known as gods.
Tell me, how do you know this?
I found their design, and it told me. It immediately began to answer the motivation behind just about every ancient mystery that I've studied so far, every ancient tradition. Every wisecrack of old seems to have been motivated by this design, this great redesign of the Earth and solar system.
So in other words, it was here before 20,000 years ago, and it was actually reconfigured.
That's right. I don't want people to mistake it for creation. It was a redesign, not a creation. On the other hand, ancient man did, I think, afterwards, after the gods were long gone and they didn't know any better, didn't know what they had, they confused it with the original creation, just as they confused the deeds of the gods with God.
Tell me a little bit about this book. It's literally a map in many ways.
Yes, the gods remade the land masses to have certain forms, and those forms show many creature-like images. They also formed the constellations in the sky, so that they could match forms in the sky to forms on the earth and tell a story thereby, communicate a story.
I mean, did you read ancient articles or script?
Oh, yes. I've read various mythological traditions, the Greek canon and
So you went to the Greek mythology and other mythologies?
Yes, that's not originally what I did. I'm a scientist. I'm a physicist. I have a master's in physics and 25 years of varied experience in math and physics. And I wanted to do an objective study, scientific study of the night sky to see if I could find possible clues to the ancient obsessions that have haunted and shadowed mankind throughout history.
So you went out there and you started searching this
started
idea.
Looking, and I was looking basically for something as obvious in the sky as the Great Pyramid is on the ground, and to make a long story short, I found it.
Where is it?
There, the center of the design in the sky is a truncated pyramid shape, a rhombus centered on the ecliptic north pole in the celestial sphere.
Would if I went out here and looked at the sky tonight, could I see that?
Well, you'd have to figure out where the ecliptic North Pole is.
Well, that was what I was hinting at. Gee, let me look here.
I hadn't
thought of that.
What
do you mean by that statement?
Well, the Earth orbits the Sun in a plane, an unchanging plane,
yeah. Uh-huh.
And that plane is called the ecliptic plane because that's the plane that the Sun, Moon, and Earth have to all be in order to make an eclipse.
So most people, to make it understandable, I guess we're talking about they're all circling on the same level.
That's right. And most of the planets orbit in just about the same plane as the Earth, mm-hmm. So that ecliptic plane defines the orientation of the entire solar system. And so it's like you know how to make a top out of a thin disk and like a toothpick? The thin disk would be the ecliptic plane, and the toothpick, one end of the toothpick would be the pole of the ecliptic. One would be the ecliptic North Pole, and the other end of the toothpick would be the ecliptic South Pole.
So we're talking about not the North and South Pole of the Earth, but the solar system.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And so the North Pole will be out by Mars someplace, or where?
Well, it's the Earth is tilted. Its spin axis is tilted with respect to the ecliptic axis by 23.5 degrees, so it would be 23.5 degrees from the celestial North Pole. The Earth is like a giant top spinning as it goes around the Sun, and its spin axis is always 23.5 degrees away from that ecliptic axis.
You know, I guess I'm just too provincial on this. We're trying to figure out.
I have a terrible time trying to get this across.
From the ecliptic North Pole, is that east, west, south?
The Earth's North Pole points to the celestial North Pole on the celestial sphere. And
So if I were flying an airplane or had a dog sled on the North Pole point,
right,
and looked straight up,
right,
then
you would see the celestial North Pole.
And how far would that be from me?
It's an indefinitely far.
Okay, just
it's undefined.
Forever.
Well, yes, basically it's forever or just a very long distance.
Yeah. So the Alpha Omega might have been talking about the poles.
It could be. It could be. Or he could have been talking about...
I'm still
about
trying to wrap my mind around this, but I like the idea.
I know. We're doing this a cappella.
I can't really say it's sitting out there by Saturn or down by Pluto or wherever. Huh?
It's the constellation Draco surrounds the ecliptic North Pole. As a matter of fact... In ancient times, the Draco was the winding serpent that twined around both the ecliptic pole and the celestial pole. So it's the twining serpent, the Leviathan of the Bible.
And this is made up of many stars, so it's huge.
That's right. And the ecliptic North Pole is in the middle of the first loop of the constellation Draco. So that's
okay,
where you look.
And there you have it, folks. Go get your star maps and start checking this out. I don't doubt that you're a scientist now. You've really you've explained.
I've screwed thing.
But you're doing well.
Oh,
I do have
good.
At least a concept. Of
that,
what
thank
we're
you very
about.
Much.
And I'm very interested in this subject. Period. So if they designed it or redesigned it, really,
that's right.
What was it like before? Do we have any clues?
Yes, they put enough shapes in the sky and Earth to enable not just one mapping, but a series of mappings. And one bunch of those mappings shows where the former ecliptic pole was, the former orientation of the solar system.
Is it far away from this one?
Ooh, I don't have that off the tip of my tongue, but yes, it's a good ways.
Yeah, okay.
It was... you would have to find the constellation Crater, and it was next to the constellation Crater. And now it's in the middle of Draco.
Now, you know, we talk about these poles, North Pole, South Pole, immediately here on Earth. We have that, and I think, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, a polar shift is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that they had a polar galactic shift.
A designed one, yes.
A design. And who designs this?
All the ancient traditions say the gods.
And so you have to leave it at that.
I have to leave it at that. Those traditions are all I have, all the testimony I have.
So when you talk about that and you approach this from a scientific basis, and then you go take a look at some of the religious teachings of many religions and many tenets and ideas.
That's right.
And mysticism, and you throw all of this in. Mm-hmm. There's probably a little bit of truth in all of it.
Yes.
But based on something.
They are all motivated by that same design. Now, I was talking about the celestial North Pole circling the ecliptic North Pole, and I call that the precession circle because it's due to the Earth's precession.
Now, define for our listeners what the celestial North Pole is.
That's the projection of the Earth's own North Pole on the celestial sphere. So like you say, if you're with your sled dogs at the North Pole and look straight up, you're looking right at the celestial North Pole on the celestial sphere.
And so, if we had a polar shift here on the planet Earth, all of a sudden Hawaii, you might have 30-degree below weather.
Oh, yeah.
Or more, worse than that.
Uh-huh.
The ice would push the tidal waves up.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, the polar bears would be wearing hula skirts if they could survive.
Right.
What happens in this galaxy situation or this intergalactic shift? I imagine that had an impact on planets. Sun star systems.
My finding that everything was designed kind of indicates that things like that don't happen. That any shifts in the past were designed, they weren't calamitous, although they might have had, they certainly did, according to the traditions, had calamitous effects upon mankind, but they were planned. It wasn't just your errant asteroid or meteor coming in and tearing up the world. It was the gods remaking the world.
Are we in for another shift? It's hard to tell, probably.
I see no indication of that. I can tell you when the Earth first began.
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
You know, I was getting to 2012 and all those words. Does that have anything to do with that at all?
No, not really.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tell me what you suggested was a lot better. Tell me about that.
What were we doing now?
I lost the thread. And when it began.
I can tell you when they did this reformation of the solar system and when the Earth first began precessing around our current ecliptic North Pole. When the current orientation of the solar system was done and the Earth began precessing around it, that was about 15,000 B.C.
So, and do you have any indication of how many of these shifts we've had?
I've identified three ecliptic axes in the past.
Really?
That's right.
And
the first would have been parallel to the galactic axis. So the first axis was just everything aligned with the galaxy.
Yeah, what I'm getting at is there a certain period of time that these things happen again, or does the gods suddenly have a meeting and say it's time to design a
ship? Apparently that's it.
That's the way it happens.
The gods just took it in their heads that they wanted to transmit some messages to mankind in the future, and they did this.
You're here in Roswell, and we talk about the UFO crash of 60 years ago. It is possible, when I think about it, that perhaps in ancient times extraterrestrials landed and they'd be called gods. But you more or less think they are gods.
Well, they had the power to convince mankind. I don't even know how the term gods came about, but...
I'm not trying to get you into a theological debate at all. I'm just kind of curious about gods.
Uh-huh.
I can understand
they had the power to remake the world, and of course while they were still flying around and men could see them moving against the stars, that led them to know that the god's home was up there. And so
that's how we started talking about the gods live in heaven.
And when they remade the solar system, they began to see the planets in their new orbits. And just as they could see the lighted ships of the gods moving around before, now they could see the planets moving. And the planets in their new orbits were termed the birth of the new gods. They were identified as the new gods.
Harry Dale Huffington... Huffman, I'm sorry. Harry Dale Huffman is our guest. That's okay. Jane Swartley over there made me sound like $1 million. She'll take that out.
Okay.
I'll sound very positive.
That's fine.
I'm going to do it one more time so she gets it right.
Okay, Huffington.
No, that's and then Harry Dale Huffman.
That's right.
It's a great joy having you here. I want to ask you, why did you do all of this research? What drove you to do this? This is an interesting subject, but it's not something you think about every day.
No. I had done some important research at a job that I had 13 to 15 years ago, and I got ahead of my superiors on that one, so I lost that job after, but
that,
not before.
That happens too, and a lot of people, unless they've experienced that, they don't really believe that happens.
But right. It happens a lot.
Right. There is a pecking order, and it's not necessarily just to who's someplace, pay scales, et cetera. If you're under somebody and you know a little more than them, unfortunately, mankind likes to try to get rid of you.
That's right. That's
they
very right.
They try to protect their
But I didn't want
place.
To dwell on the negative. Yeah. Once I was terminated.
So this actually turned your life around.
It gave me the opportunity to do my own research, and this came along.
Before the dawn,
that's
and
right.
Saw dawn, and you started
That's
doing
exactly
this.
It. Yeah. That's exactly it.
And you've always been interested in this subject, more or less, I guess.
So far, you're right on the money.
Uh huh.
I found the time to do anything I wanted, and this had been a long time interest. And I looked long enough, and hard enough, and patiently enough, and found the key, that design around the ecliptic North Pole, and from there, things just started.
Okay, you found
focusing.
The key. You unlock what? The knowledge fountain of knowledge, or the universe, or what's happening?
The
here?
Key to the ancient mysteries. All of the peoples of the earth, for example, talked about the home of the gods, and they said it was in heaven and in the sky, and heaven was the celestial sphere in that regard. And as a matter of fact, the specific references to heaven in all the mythological canons. Allow one to identify that area on the celestial sphere, and it is the precession circle.
So you're telling me that you know where the location of what they thought was heaven.
That's right. What the gods told
them. Yes, yes.
And it was just in order to point to man where the center of the design was, really, to show him the center of how everything moved and was put together in our corner of the universe.
Now, what are you going to be doing next? You're out meeting people about this book, I guess, right now.
That's right.
And
I've given myself a little vacation. I'm just trying to meet a nicer form of humanity here, and I've certainly done it, and I'm thrilled.
So your experience in Roswell has been pretty nice.
Yes, it has. Yes.
A lot of people are surprised when they come to these things. They think they're going to see a bunch of people who are interested in carnivals and playtime, and they end up seeing people who are pretty deep thinkers.
Oh, yes. There are a lot of serious alternative researchers out there, and they've done great work. I think you've had Lloyd Pye on. He's a recent friend of mine in the last year.
Right. And he's done some interesting research. Did you do anything down at the UFO Museum, or just go down and see Lloyd?
I just saw whatever they had available down there,
yeah, right.
And enjoyed a lot of it. Saw Ann Robinson from the War of the Worlds fame.
Oh, yes. Ann was on her show.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was here to see that.
Yeah, right. And so, I think the UFO Museum is doing very good work.
Yes, this, really, my experience in both venues, both the convention
that's
center
what
one
get to,
and the UFO
city
Museum.
Of Roswell, mm-hmm. and Guy Malone and his group.
That's right.
They're doing a great job out there at the Civic Center.
That's too. Right. That's
this
right.
It's really a very positive experience. I hope they do it
completely.
Again.
And I do. I echo that.
Anything you'd like to bring out that I haven't? I just haven't talked to anybody recently about the celestial North Pole, so forgive me if I sounded a little puzzled.
Oh no, it hits just about everybody that way, and you've reacted very nicely to it. As a matter of fact, compared to many others, to many scientists who are closed-minded.
So there are people in the scientific community that just won't buy what you're saying. For what reason, do you think?
A very good reason. I was kind of cloistered in my research. I wasn't looking at what other people had done or were doing. I worked in an atmosphere of discovery, as I put it in my book, and unfortunately I found this great design just when science was closing itself rather violently and completely to the idea of intelligent design of the world. So there's no way I can get a scientific hearing.
So you're going with intelligent design.
Although I'm not the intelligent design theory. I'm not that.
That right. I wanted to make that clear.
That's because, right. And I'm not a creationist in that sense. What I've found is a recreation, a redesign of things.
Why do you think they redesigned it? I mean, was it just not working before?
Well, now you're getting into very heavy thinking indeed, and you do unavoidably have to touch on the religious beliefs.
Okay, well, this is kind of an intertwined subject, even though we've stayed
To the conclusion in my last chapter, I dare to address the failings or what I consider the limitations of both science and religion today, and I lost the train of my thought here. Give me a second.
Yeah, we're talking about intelligent design and religion, and you're not a creationist, and
that's
whether
right.
or not there's a theory of why do they have to redesign it and who's in charge. And whether or not this is a religious function or what does it...
And
well,
I think,
let me ask it this way.
The bottom line is I think the gods had a religious message to put forward to man, and they wanted to make sure that it was understood to be all-important. Behind that, I think, was their understanding that there is a higher reality than our physical reality here on Earth, and they wanted to make sure man knew that.
And I don't know if man's caught on yet or not.
Well, he says he has innumerable times, and then he goes out and kills, you know, his brother. And
yeah, that's true. So we might be in for another redesign.
Oh, it could be. It could be. Now, the ancients would say definitely cyclic.
Yeah. Okay, Harry Dale Huffman, the name of the book is?
The End of the Mystery, meaning the Ancient Mysteries.
Is this an expensive book?
I'm afraid it is at present. It's only, on-demand publishers only print what copies a person orders, and it's in color. I did it so that it would be attractive, and so I made over 200 nice color illustrations for it, and in that version it costs about $60. Also, it's available in black and white for about 26.
Okay. So, as we get the word out, people are really interested in. You have a website that they can go visit, I think.
Yes, they can go to www.lulu.com/HDHsciences.
We have a link to that, of course, and we'll talk to you again.
Well, thank you.
I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you
very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Cover Up Cafe.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we are in Roswell, New Mexico for the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash. Ann Robinson is with us. A Hollywood product all the way. You even went to Hollywood High School, huh, Ann?
Certainly did. Born in Hollywood, born in the Hollywood Hospital, went to Hollywood High School. My father worked on the corner of Hollywood and Vine in the Bank of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, I remember when that was there years ago.
Yeah, the Equitable Building.
Yeah, anyway, what brings you to Roswell? You've made a few movies, and one of them's pretty famous for Alien Contact.
Yeah, I guess I was the first woman ever touched by an alien in a motion picture.
And how did it feel?
Well, I couldn't feel it, quite frankly. It was such a gentle touch.
Oh, okay.
Such a gentle touch. I had to be told when to look frightened. War of the Worlds was quite a popular movie, and it's lasted 50 years.
Yes, it was. Incredible.
And people are still eager to talk to me about it and complimenting me on the movie, and I'm very grateful to be an ambassadrix for Paramount Studio and George Pal, and now for Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. You know, the original, it seems to me, of course, the radio show originally with Orson Welles, then they made the movie, the one with Pal. I mean, that was really high technology back there in the 50s, what he did with all of that.
And without a computer.
Yeah, it was amazing.
All done by hand, all done by talent, by love.
If somebody gets a chance to, I guess it's out on a DVD.
Oh, my God, yes. You could get it right at my table if you're interested.
Absolutely. I kind of thought that might
happen. Just come over to my table tomorrow. I've got a whole
gaggle. Not only is she a great Hollywood personality, she's a great plugger.
Well,
that's good.
Paramount's very happy that people are so grateful.
We're talking about the UFO Museum. And you have a table there, and you're there. You'll be there all day Sunday, right?
Yes, I will be. Oh, I've enjoyed it so much. Oh, the people have been just priceless, just precious people.
But tell me a little bit about what's been happening over there. You've been there since the 4th?
Yes, we arrived. We set up all our we left Los Angeles a little in afternoon on Monday.
Okay.
And
It's not easy to get to Roswell.
Well, but it's a lovely drive, really.
Right.
Gosh, well, I live in the United States of America. I want to see it.
Yeah.
I don't want to fly over it.
Well, we drove here, too. I feel the same way about it.
Absolutely. I love trains. I love cars.
Well, great.
It's 35,000 feet that upsets me.
Yeah. I miss those trains from years ago that you'd like the San Francisco Chief and things like
Lord,
that.
Oh, Lord, yes. My daddy used to go up on the Lark.
Yeah.
At night, we used to see him off at the Glendale Station. He'd go up on the Lark.
Yeah, so, there's some pretty neat times about that. What do you think about the two changes of the script with Spielberg's version? I mean, I don't remember in the original War of the Worlds that the... they were basically eating people.
Well, actually, Steven Spielberg is actually what H.G. Wells wrote.
Right.
So he's a lot closer to the actual factual book than George Pal was. We were quieter, more innocent people in the 50s. I don't think we could have put up with the detail that Spielberg... in his movie. No, I don't think... although, George Pal wanted to make his machines walk, but it was too costly. You know, he was very famous for his puppetoons. And that, the stop-action motion.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He and Ray Harryhausen. But Paramount didn't want it. It was too costly and too much trouble. So they came up with those brilliant Stingray flying machines.
Yeah, right. It was
and
pretty
with that item. Cobra hood, which actually came... the idea came from Jack Center, who was one of the... the fellow did all the models for the show. It came from a Zenith record player. He said there was something very mysterious the way this record that covered the needle.
You're talking about back there with the record changer and the needle would come over.
Yes, and the needle, the way the arm would slide back and forth, and it was covered by a hooded cobra. And he said, so that thing's modeled after a Zenith record player.
Well, that's an interesting little sidelight. See, folks, it pays to listen to the show. We got inside information.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
At the UFO Museum, you've been here for a while now. You've met a lot of people. They come up. They tell you all kinds of stories and experiences, I'm sure.
Oh, the highlight today, I met Jack Trowbridge.
Uh-huh. Jack was on our show.
Oh, my Lord. I couldn't believe his stories. The man was there.
Yes, he was.
He's going to be 90?
Yeah, 89 now, I guess.
Yes, incredible person. His stories just left you with your mouth hanging open. My goodness.
We had Jack on our show this morning.
Oh, Lord, a real honest-to-goodness witness.
What do you pick up at the UFO Museum? Walter Haut was... one of the founders of that. This affidavit has just been released. We had Tom and Don on recently about their new book. What do you make of all of this?
Well, all of this really is quite new to me because I'm now among a bunch of,
that's the reason I'm asking
what they call eggheads. I'm talking to intelligent people who are educated and interesting and write books and they're authorities on what's going on. It's not the everyday paper show that I'm accustomed to.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, say, oh, those people are a little, strange, but...
Oh, I don't think Mr. Friedman's strange at all.
No, I don't either. Stanton's been a good friend of ours a long time. We had a great interview with him this morning. And what I'm saying is, you get out here, you find that if you want to do some demographic research, these people have huge educations, doctorates and masters and... I mean, like Stanton, he's a nuclear physicist.
Well, if you don't believe these people, then you've got to be out of your mind. Oh, no. I mean, fortunately, my husband's purchased every book that's available, so we're going to have some read.
Well, great. You may have come over here as a novice, but you're going to leave as an expert.
Well, yes, I'll have something to finally talk about. That's intelligent. Instead of, you know, everything that everyone asks me, I love the questions. But, of course, it only pertains to War of the Worlds and what do you think? And then I have to, what do you think about aliens? What do you think? And I said, well, you know, it's like Carl Sagan. You know, I love that movie, Contact. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just loved it. In the line in the movie that, you know, if it's an awful waste of space. If there's nothing else out there,
that's a good point.
It's an awful waste of space.
Were there any hidden messages in War of the Worlds? Why now? Why did it come back out? We hear all these theories.
Well, for the reason of the movie,
in other words, are they was it a government plot to acquaint us that the ETs might be actually
a little dangerous? Well, no, actually, this story has been going on now. It's been popular for three centuries.
Oh, that's true.
In 1898, Wells was mad at the British imperialism. So he decided to bring the Martians down to wipe. He said, I'd like to see what would happen to these people who think they're so smart. They've controlled the world. They own everything. And now, well, let's see what they would have to do if they really had a problem. And then in 1938, we have Orson Welles.
Yes, another Welles.
So now we don't have British imperialism. We have Hitler. World War II
finishes.
Well,
that's what I'm getting at.
Yes.
The timing here.
Exactly. All the metaphors for the Martians. Mm-hmm. Now we have George Pell. We've finished World War II, and now we're worried about the communists. So now with George Pell, we've got the Red Menace. Now poor Steven Spielberg, he has Osama bin Laden. He's got the Al-Qaeda.
Okay.
It's never going to end. This story is going to go on forever. It'll go on. It'll be four centuries before they're finished with it.
Now when we... talk about the ETs that may have died here and probably did. I think if you took the evidence of Stanton Friedman and Tom Carey and Don Smith and others have come up with, if you were a criminal lawyer, you could probably win a pretty good case circumstantially.
Yes.
I mean, it's fairly obvious extraterrestrials were recovered, the bodies, and one or two were alive for a while. When we get into things like that, that's even stranger than a movie, if you think about it.
Oh, it's just jaw-dropping. It's so exciting.
So have you... What my point is, you were a Hollywood lady, a Hollywood teenager, a Hollywood kid. You've been around the movie business all your life. You come out here. Did you have any preconceptions about Roswell? Did you believe it before you came?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Why?
Well, because years and years ago, I met a woman, Maggie Mahoney, who was, I've lost her name, Sally Field's mother.
Okay.
And we were working on a television show, and for some reason we got on the subject of UFOs, and I'd never really paid any attention or heard of aliens and close encounters 1, 2, and 3. And evidently, she would go out to a place in the desert called Big Rock.
Yeah, and the giant rock.
Yes, I had no idea. And so
we were out there last year and did a show, and Roberta Scott, our location producer here, and I jumped in her car and went out to the Big Rock and saw it all.
Well, she introduced me to this, and I became fascinated with it. And then years later, I was living in Mexico City. I was married to Matador Jaime Bravo. And
a real-life Matador.
A real-life Matador. I have two sons. One son is with me here today, Stefan Adrian.
Well, he's a nice fellow, and
he
takes care of his mother, I tell you that.
He certainly does. I don't know what I'd do without him.
You can't make it in Hollywood without an assistant. You got one that really cares about you.
I've got an assistant and a manager and a helper and a great gardener. Oh, my Lord.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy, he does everything. But meanwhile, I'm in Mexico and picked up a Look magazine. And it's early 60s before Stefan is born. His other brother's, was born in 1958, and I'm reading about Benny and Betty and Barney Hill.
Yeah.
And that reminded me of what Maggie Mahoney had told me about Giant Rock. And I thought, my goodness, this is really interesting. And I wanted to learn more.
And then you get here and you find out Stanton Friedman just wrote a new book.
Lord Almighty, I couldn't believe it. When I met him the first day he walked in, I was so happy I just had to hug him.
Yeah,
it really was an exciting moment.
So you were acquainted with the subject anyway, besides just being cast in War of the Worlds.
Well, that's right. But it all came later. The real thinking and the real thought of the whole idea came much, much later.
Let's get back to the movie, War of the Worlds. When you make a movie with special effects like that, actually, a lot of times, what you see on the screen is not what's happening while they're shooting, right?
Oh, absolutely. What I'm looking, there's nothing there that I'm looking at. It's just not there.
And when you touched by an alien, were you touched by somebody or?
Charlie Gamora, the chap that built the alien, was a very slight fellow. So it was made to fit his body. The first one was made, it was far too large. So they said, go back and finish it because we got to shoot tomorrow. So he and his daughter, she was 12 years old at the time, they worked all night long on making what director Byron Haskin finally called him Willie Lump Lump. So they worked on Willie all night long and finally got him to fit Charlie Gamora. And it hadn't been cured yet. It was still wet and oozy. And they said, oh, Lord, if this thing splits when they put it on him, we're gone.
A dead duck.
Oh, right. Because
it had a lot of money involved in shooting stuff.
Had to be shot that
Always been that way, but it's really that way now.
Right. So, they slipped it on over him, put him on what is like a skateboard. They called it a dolly. And they pushed him in. And now the arms were entirely too long because they didn't have time to make the arms, to fit the smaller body.
Right.
They still had the great big arms from the previous model. So he fit his, slipped it over him, and his hands would go in up to the elbows, and that's how he could move, like there were little rings there to move the sucker fingers. And then somebody pushed him in carefully and then held his elbow and gently put it on my shoulder. And somebody had to tell me, it's on your shoulder now.
So you weren't kidding when you were soft touch.
I'm a soft touch, really. or Charlie was a soft touch.
Yeah, but you, when you felt it, you
right.
barely felt it.
I barely felt it to have my reaction.
Now, don't you have a website?
Yes, I do. www.annrobinson.com.
And we have a link to that. And if we
go
over to that website, we always, when we interview people, we do as much as we can for them because they're nice enough to come on the air.
Oh, so. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely of you.
What are we going to find on annrobinson.com?
Pardon me?
What are we going to find on annrobinson.com?
Well, I think it's just going to find me. A lot of pictures. You'll find a biography of pictures. And
okay.
It's really rather primitive because we haven't really updated it and made it very sophisticated.
Well,
so I think I'm going to
go
back with a lot more information.
Yeah, you're probably going to have to go update it a little bit because we're going to
absolutely
get people to get over there. Are you still actively looking for parts in Hollywood?
I've been offered, several now and then. People were most gracious, but a lot of people aren't connected with the Screen Actors Guild. They're not union. And I, still being a member of the Screen Actors Guild,
I don't blame you.
I can't work in a non-union motion picture.
And there seems to be a
trouble.
Huge movement.
Big trouble. So, but I'm just lucky to be invited by gracious people like you and the people at Roswell to come talk, come visit, and say hello.
Okay, what's the situation in, you've been in the movie business all your life. What's the situation in the movies? Is the story still the thing, or have we lost it all to special effects?
I think we've lost it all to special effects. People now are so jaded. They want to. No one has an imagination anymore. I grew up with the radio.
Me too.
You know, and so you. On Saturday mornings there was a program called Let's Pretend.
I remember that show.
Do you? Oh, I loved it. So exactly, you pretend. I grew up with Les Tremaine, Mr. First Nighter.
Yes.
You know, he did over 60.
You would get in the taxi cab and go over to. I think you got on Sixth Avenue or someplace and went to the theater district.
Yes, Mr. First Nighter.
Yeah, and then
smoking in the outer lobby only.
Yeah.
And you know that when he did that live. And he was in full dress, white tie and tails, top hat and cane.
Did you do some radio?
Did that. Never have done radio.
Never did radio.
I think it'd be fun. I'd love to.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
But I grew up with listening to Les Tremaine's voice.
Right.
And when you grow up on radio, you have an imagination. And now everybody does it for you.
I had
special effects do it for you.
I had a very good friend that was a... actor and so far he's gone now a long time, but at one time he did 6 or 7 parts in the same day on radio on all network shows.
Oh yes,
back in radio you could do that.
Oh I know. When we were on the set with Les and I used to laugh and say, you know, try to guess what the commercial product was. He was on Helen Trent. He was on Jack Armstrong. He was
Jack
on
Armstrong,
the
All-American
boy. Sponsor was Wheaties.
that's right. Isn't it amazing we can still remember those sponsors?
Oh, my Lord. Langendorf Bread was the, or Weber's Bread, I'm not quite sure, was the Lone Ranger.
Yeah,
Ovaltine was, you know, what are you looking for, darling? Ovaltine was Orphan Annie?
Yeah, that's true. I'm glad. We may use this part of the show to pitch advertising agencies.
Absolutely. Do you remember I Love a Mystery with Doc, Jack, and Reggie?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I used to sneak my portable radio in. And, of course, in those days, a portable radio, I had four 12-volt batteries.
Yeah.
I could hardly lift it.
Yeah.
That was a portable radio. And from 9:45 to 10 o'clock, I would hear Doc, Jack, and Reggie with that wonderful theme song. Oh, it was so exciting. No, I grew up with imagination and radio, and your question was, pardon me,
how
movies are today. They don't let you think. They do all the thinking for you.
I agree with you completely, but hey, maybe a part will come along. Maybe it'll be an SAG, a SAG job.
I certainly hope so.
And maybe we'll see you again soon.
Oh, I would love it. I mean, I was Gene Barry and I did a cameo in Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. I was Grandmama. I was the one that kept saying, your mother's at Grandmama's house. You don't have to worry now. Poor little Dakota Fanning was scared to death that her mother was dead. And the very end, Gene Barry and I show up and had a lovely cameo, and the movie was over with.
Yeah. Okay, let's give her a hand, everybody.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being here.
We'll be right back in a moment. This is Jerry Pippen.
Hello, this is Farah Yurduze. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippen Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Farah's banner for the answers to the most personal question.
Okay, you know, we've been broadcasting from the Cover Up Cafe now for a few days here in Roswell, New Mexico. And really, this 60th anniversary has been a tremendous success in almost every way, I think. And we have a man here who is responsible for bringing us to Roswell, and we do appreciate that, and allowing us to use part of his nice restaurant to actually do our shows. Gene Fraser, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm getting tired as usual, like the rest of the folks.
Yeah. Now, tell me a little bit. You know, we're winding down now. This is the end of the show, the end of the celebration. A lot of people are already going home. They've been going at it night and day. Tell me a little bit about the Cover Up Cafe before we get to some other things.
Well, as everybody knows, this is a historical building, you might say. It's been here for 40 years next year, and most of the people, that's a two generations. They don't realize what it was before that, prior to it. And
it was right here on the intersection of the two main highways going into Roswell.
That's right. This is the dead center of town. No one can go through Roswell without passing this restaurant or this corner. This is 2nd and Main, which is 380 and 70 going east and west, and 285 going north and south.
Now, in normal times, when you're not invaded by ETs on the anniversary, and all of the ET fans, that includes Roberta Scott and Shanina Johnson of our staff and Jane Swartley and myself, what are your hours here?
The normal hours are right now are 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they'll probably be extended into 11 p.m. with our beer and wine that we've been working on. And we started out originally 11 o'clock to 11 at night until that. And then we had to crank breakfast back up again. That was a popular thing in this spot. And so that's what's been happening. And you probably had a chance, or you've been here in the evenings, you hadn't had a chance to see how it kind of packs to the wall and slammed away at breakfast time. There's a lot of people that go through here traditionally. I'll remember when it was at Denny's for 40 years, and they come down the road from Rio Doso, and they say, well, let's stop at the Denny's. A lot of them think it's a Denny's with a different name, but it's not quite.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about the cafe in general and its location, I always try to refer to the UFO Museum down the street, since our audience is an international audience and people come from around the world here that could find it. You're only about a half block from that. And there's quite a few other interesting shops right on through this block.
Yeah, it's only a few footsteps. The whole area that's entitled to ufology of Roswell is within a block distance. So anyone that comes downtown here finds a place to park. They can reach anything within a block. And that includes the souvenir stores and the gift shops across the street on both sides. You've got the Not of This World Coffee House across the street.
I thought the city of Roswell getting behind it this year was really a plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the behind the festival.
Yes.
It needed to. We expected just a large crowd like 1997 when we had the 50th anniversary, so they wanted to be prepared because they weren't quite prepared then.
Well, but it went pretty smooth considering everything, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a chance to see what was at the convention.
No, you were
up there,
too busy working.
Busy running around.
Yeah.
But I understand.
Handling the crowds here.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more about this restaurant. I've had more than one person tell me about your hamburgers. They say they're so juicy. You know, one of those famous hamburger chains talks about it running down their lips and their chin. But I understand yours do, too, and they're even more tasty.
Oh, that's right. If they want to let them run, we'll bring the bibs. The one you want to try is the Swiss bacon.
What other kind of things do you serve here?
Oh, we have the steaks. That's primarily what we started out with, was the line of steaks here. We have the, and has anyone had a chance to see the whole basis of the concept and the theme is the 1947 incident and wartime. The fact that this was one of the most famous bases out here, the Roswell Army Airfield, which became Walker Air Force Base after the...
Where is that located from here?
That's directly south. Main Street right here was set up, and it dead ends right at the base, at the old gate entry. And then subsequently, years later, they made a left turn and created Southeast Main to go dogleg around the base to head down to Dexter and south onto Artesia. But it takes a little.
Can the general public still go in there? That's, I understand you're actually going to have a commercial airline service there pretty soon.
Oh, that's right. I mean, American Airlines is committed. They're starting American Eagle and Bombardier jets and others, the real new high-tech mid-range jets. Coming in, they're going to do daily trips, round trips to Dallas, and then the next thing they're starting will be round trips to Phoenix. And then upcoming, we have United Airlines has been looking.
So that's one thing Roswell's been looking for a while, is some good commercial air service. Looks like you finally got it.
Yes, for a long time.
And that certainly will enable people to get here a little easier.
Yeah, because we're rather remote. You know, the whole city was based to be remote back in the in wartime.
So well, that was the whole idea, the reason they put that atomic bomb wing here to begin with, I imagine.
That's right, exactly. So now after that was all said and done, it's kind of almost in the middle of nowhere, but it's not becoming, we want to make it a destination point, so it's in the center of everything that everybody reaches to from there.
I'm going to talk to you about some other projects you're doing in a moment, but let's talk UFOs for a minute. Mm-hmm. Gene Fraser one time was sending me some information about some things, and one thing came up I didn't know anything about. And I said, Gene, how do you know all this stuff? And you told me basically, well, hey, I've been a citizen of Roswell for a while. People talk, and I listen.
That's right. There's still people coming out and talking more and more. You hear that every investigator I've talked to said, yes, we've found another 40 people that are still alive that still have a thing to say. And everybody, the event went on for a couple of months.
So. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I can give you a fair amount of collateral experience on that. When the Haunt memo came out, the affidavit, and started getting publicized, previous years when I come here, one of the things I've always looked for is a witness who was either right there or at home when the witnesses saw it, came back and told them. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever talked to me. Mm-hmm. I've had three people talk to me about things that, they would not have dreamed. I had a lady who has a secret, top secret clearance from Los Alamos today that was talking to me about a lot of things. And she knew Walter, and once he put it out, she says, well, I'm going to go ahead and tell what I know. And this basically is the way it works. It's like dominoes.
Yeah.
One person falls and they start talking about it. Somebody else will start talking about it.
Yeah, the most infamous event was the one you know about, the Pappy Henderson who flew the B-29 out of here. And he happened to see it on television that somebody was exposing it on a show. And he says, well, I guess they declassified it, so I can come and talk about it now. Yeah. And that's what's happening a lot. Every time something breaks like that with Walter Haunt, a lot of people are talking the same thing. They say, well, we take his word for it, so I guess...
What is your feeling about the crash sites? There seems to be a lot of them out there. You're not discounting them, I don't think.
No, not anymore. They, as Walter's memo said, that the primary site was the actual impact site, and they were using the debris site as a diversion.
Redirection.
And the discovery of the debris field, of course, is what made Roswell famous, because that was on private property, and it was the last thing they were able to clean up when Braswell came across that and brought it into town days later. And the theories, they had to do something about that. That's what started the balloon cover-up and everything else, because too many people saw it that they had to start doing something about it. So
now, I know you've been getting very friendly and have been for some time with quite a few of the big names in ufology. Mm-hmm. And you've been meeting with them, and you talk a little business, and we'll talk a little bit about what that business is in a moment. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they tell you things.
Oh, they do. You know, myself,
you're becoming my main man here. In fact, a couple of Hollywood types who have documentaries out, they'd speak highly of you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So you're a master networker.
That's right. We've come because everyone's involved with everything, you know, the resort that we're working on and the city's alien apex and so on. And it's like a central clearinghouse, like Thomas used to say, because this is becoming more and more the UFO center. Everyone wants some place to have a center
now,
point.
We put you on the air and the story about Earth Station Roswell as it was just becoming an idea, mm-hmm. and it's coming along slowly but surely. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, that may be a plus.
Yeah, that was 2005. We had started in 2004, 2005. By that time, it was pretty well completed, formed out, and then more plan work was done on that. Pretty thorough now, and we've been collecting investors.
So Earth Station Roswell is still alive.
Oh, yeah, it's alive, and it could use a little bit better health, but it generates new health all the time. We've had several people.
Maybe it's had a little extraterrestrial intervention.
Yeah, we hope so. We've had a lot of things going on since then. Since we started out, the city got on board, and they decided, our thing was such a good idea to have a central point, and Ours is primarily a resort complex, different than the Alien Apex, which is the city's amusement park project.
Yeah, they got a theme park going.
They have a theme park, and they need 75 to 150 acres. And ours is 34 acres by the time it's totally done. But it's, imagine yourself in Las Vegas, a Las Vegas-style resort without the gambling. And that's basically what it is within a town. So we have the combinations for everything. We're the world-class spa, there's a concert arena, lecture halls,
yeah,
facilities, education,
we
the whole thing.
We talk about Las Vegas being the largest theme park on Earth. Well, hey, Roswell may actually be that. Once if you get to Station Roswell going with all the things you have in mind, they have this theme park going as well and a few other things. It looks like there's a big future for Roswell.
Yeah, more and more people. Now, that's why the airlines has decided to turn around and it's time to change. We have a lot of retirement opportunities here in Roswell. That's been a large wave. We've had people come in from California, and I have a chance to meet them all the time. They're in and out. They're retiring this way. It's more affordable.
Well, you were out in California at one time.
I was originally out there in San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. It was my original stomping grounds and education area and so on. And
When we talk about Roswell and the growth, that's a positive, of course. But at the same time, Roswell has this mystique about it. And a lot of people say, well, if they made disclosure tomorrow, Roswell would be sunk. I think it's just the opposite.
Yes.
I think then it might become the home of the Holy Grail.
That's
for
right.
Every UFO person that ever even thought that something existed.
That's right. It becomes a home place.
Yeah. Steve Bassett told me on a show he thought they would be lined up on the highways here, coming right off of the Interstate 40 and every place else, and taking these little highways down here. And
that's right.
He says that everybody who's ever been interested in that subject will want to touch the holy ground.
That's right. And even those that weren't. See, you'll become believers,
all of a
sudden, the non-believers.
Become believers overnight.
Overnight, because you just open
salvation.
Up a whole new crowd. That's right. Exactly what that is.
So do you still have your website on Earth Station Roswell?
Yes, we're still there at earthstationroswell.com. And you keep track of information on there as things change. And the investor relation page gives an update on what's going on there. They look over the main homepage, and it gives you a chance to see exactly what's going on, how broad and spread the amenities are in the whole complex.
Was it last year you went up to MUFON or the year before?
It was the year before. We talked to MUFON. That was their 2005.
So, I mean, you have been reaching out to the community, and they've been reaching back.
Oh, yes. We sat down with the board of directors at International Mutual UFO Network, and we offered them a home base here for their central to move. But right now they're operating out of Denver, and we gave them opportunity and plenty of space to operate from. We want to make this a more central point.
I believe that you went to MUFON to explain to them that this is going to be a serious research center as well as a great resort.
That's right. We have besides the resort in the folks that happen to see the plans when they go through the visitor center here in Roswell and see the actual blueprints and drawings that have been done for years and all the graphics. So they go to the website, they'll see some that are not quite as detailed, but they'll get the idea. So many people are interested in the exhibit area. There's it's different. Not a museum. In this case, it works its way all around a 304-foot diameter lobby, which is end-to-end wall, floor-to-ceiling. The exhibit hall takes up the 16,000 square foot around the circumference with the retail shops in the center and the check-in and so on, and it's no charge. It's a weave in and out of things that'll change all the time. It's built as a timeline that goes on from the original first ancient sightings and goes all the way around into the late dates. A lot of things will be brought in there as far as research. Now, other research will take place in lecture halls. We talked in the Aurora, which is basically a 400-seat lecture facility, and just like you would in any other university now that's equipped with full soft seats and bench tables to do all your studies and drawings and absorb the lectures, you can do continuing education there is what they want to do. We'll also have world's largest LED screen for motion pictures, and it has 60 foot wide, 3 millimeter pixel resolution. And then in the crater, which is the concert arena, which is called the crater because it's an amphitheater. It's like a crater with a dome on the top of it for weather protection. And also it has a 360-degree view of the stage, which also rotates. And there'll be lectures and things that'll be done off of that stage, which everybody will be able to view all around. There'll be broadcasts being done for that with the camera work that's there. So they'll be able to view satellite network programming in the concert arena, or as it's used as a lecture. And they're also setting up as a broadcast facility in the Aurora as well. So we're doing show programming out of there. And further, there's a expansion area that's just to the northeast. You'll see that slight noting of that when you look at the overall layout that's in the plans on the website there, where the research facility will be going. And then accompanying that on the side, a large hydroponic greenhouse covered with a dome. And then every other panel in that is the latest technology in the arena of the light silica. The back behind that, we're having a fully sustainable apartment complex, which we need to have the people that come up and staff.
Fully sustainable, you mean it can support itself without outside utilities?
Support itself without outside utilities. So a lot of high tech, a lot of people are looking at all that. We call the whole station as a platform for new technology. So all your cutting edge companies are all interested in there coming in shopping and want an opportunity to show their products.
You're a designer and this is your pet project to begin with, so I imagine you're in on all of the cutting edge, as they say, of this new technology.
Yeah, we have to stay in touch with it all the time, because one thing happens when we open it up, we want to make sure that we're 2 years ahead of anything, so we're not opening up with stale technology. So it's a 20 to 24 month construction period, so you have to be 4 years out, in fact.
So are we going to have this by the 65th, or will it be the 70th?
Well, we hope it'll be sooner than that. Right now it's projected at 2009 at the end, and if we might go into 2010. And we're kind of running parallel to what Richard Branson's doing with Virgin Galactic over the pass and the mountains over there with the New Mexico Spaceport. And he originally, which he's on track as far as having something blasting out of there, and they're operating at 2007. But the actual physical takeoffs of the Spaceship 2 with carrying the six passengers.
How far is that spaceport from here?
That's about 190 miles.
That's nothing in New Mexico.
Yeah, it's nothing in New Mexico. It's 192 miles to Santa Fe and 211 miles to Albuquerque, and that's the next. You know, it's that far. It's 3.5 hours, no matter if you want to go anywhere.
People in Roswell say, I think I'll run over to Albuquerque for a couple hours.
Yeah, and that's what you do. That's what you have to do.
Yeah. Anything you'd like to bring up that we haven't? Is there a possibility that down the line this will be a public company, or have you made that decision yet?
Yeah, there's a possibility later on.
Yeah.
At this point, we talked about Bank of America as our major bank funding for it, and it's a LLC, which is private offering. The members produce 30% of the total project, and Bank of America backs up 70%.
Someone that's interesting to you, you mentioned before, and it's on our show about Bank of America ready to do some financing. Mm-hmm. So that's a good step.
That's a good step.
Yeah. If someone interested in that part of the business, are you open to talking to people?
Oh, yeah, because there's a lot of people have when we. A lot of people are interested in the project. Richard Branson's interested in himself, and of course he's got his hands full here in New Mexico involved in that. He's the Virgin Management, and most people remember him and recognize him. William Whitehorn or Will Whitehorn, who handles the New Mexico, anything to do with New Mexico business. He's the president of Virgin Galactic and handling the things over the hill over here. A lot of people, John Travolta of all folks, have been handed a personal copy and is interested in things like that. Paul Allen and Bill Gates also. They're involved in philanthropic endeavors at this point, where the only part that's a 501(c) at this point is the exhibition hall, but the expanded area, all the research center and all the rest of that is a nonprofit. So generally our philosophy is a lot of the people involved in this field or all other educational fields have to be involved with grant search. And they stumble a lot because especially ufology and they're not handed a silver platter like they are with other endeavors. So in this case, our commercial aspect of the resort is what pays for the non-commercial part in the research and going forward with that. So and that's our approach to this.
So basically, that is a pledge and a goal and mm-hmm. Standard operating procedure and a policy or whatever term you want to use.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And,
Gene, I want to thank you personally for being a great host and doing everything you can in the world to make mm-hmm. us feel comfortable here. You've done that every year.
Yep. Yeah, you're welcome, and we're glad to do it. And each year, you know, this is the home for Jerry Pippin Show.
Now, what do you anticipate next? I guess, really, these other witnesses coming forward. I think mm-hmm. it'll probably start dribbling out pretty fast.
Yeah, they come in, and a lot of them come in here to the Cover-Up Cafe, of course, because that's what
right.
we're doing.
It's a good place to release some information.
Release the covered-up information over here. That's the...
We're
not
know.
Busy retrieving balloons, you know. That's one of our our primary objective here is the we have the station crew in the back that are ever alert, and we have our retrieval crew. So whenever a high-speed balloon goes overhead and is tracked down, and when we hear that there's been an impact out there, the retrieval crew has to break away, and the unit goes out there and brings them back in here. We store a lot of spare weather balloon parts over here and track them constantly, so we have to stay on our toes immediately.
Well, we appreciate you helping us out, and Linda Armstrong and others.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
right.
We couldn't do it without everybody pulling together, and you're doing your part for Roswell, I must say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hope too. This is a lot of things are happening downtown here. It's expanding into more of a nightlife area. We're trying to build more of that, in fact, because all our new stuff is in the north part of town. So this is more of the old town experience.
And that's right downtown.
That's right downtown. So this is known
the
as
center
downtown,
of town.
Center of town.
So I want to thank you, Gene, for inviting us once again. And, folks, the Cover-Up Cafe, if you're within, Albuquerque's only a couple of 100 miles. If you're on I-40, just drop down here.
That's
what
right.
What highway they take from
I'm glad to see it. From Albuquerque, it's 285. They just run south.
Okay, you go past Sandia Base, and there's a lot of things happening there, and you drop
down. Oh, yeah,
down.
They can pop out there and go to Vaughan. You know, it's a
well,
nice
you better
experience.
Not drop and hang around there too often or too long.
A lot of people that come by here all the time. They've been coming by for years. All the folks that live and have places and have fun up there in Ruidoso, up there, the Ruidoso Downs, when they come back through here, headed on to back on to Dallas or back on to Lubbock, they come through here by way of 380 70.
Yes.
And the shopping that's done up there, Ski Apache in the wintertime. It's a year-round resort town area there, Alpine Village style. So they come through here, and this is where they stop. Right through the center of town on the way back to Texas.
I must say that we've had a fine time. I'd like to thank everyone in Roswell that helped us out and to make this a big adventure for people around the world to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And the Roswell season, thanks to Gene, will continue right on up through December. We have plenty of backlog of shows, and we're releasing them fast as we can. Mm-hmm. And when the series ends, we'll be ready for a new one.
Yeah, we'll be all set here, too.
Yeah,
we'll have a lot of new
be next
happening.
Year ready almost to start planning again. Yeah. It starts all over. So, we've had a very good time, and it's been well worthwhile from a research standpoint this time. On behalf of our entire production staff, we have Jane Swartley, we have Shanina Johnson, we have Roberta Scott, and this is Jerry Pippin. Until next time. Thanks for listening to the Roswell series. Cheers.
Really want. The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.
There's Tennessee Birdwalk. Choo-choo. There's Tennessee Birdwalk.